This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Google says it's bringing a new generation of internet access to North Carolina. The company's going to build its ultra-high-speed Google Fiber service in seven cities in the Triangle and Charlotte. The company also chose Atlanta and Nashville as the next cities to get ultra-high-speed connectivity. Google Fiber promises to create broadband networks 100 times faster than standard connection. Well, who's going to get that service? Which regulations might stand in the way? Which regulations might be moved out of the way? And what does it mean for Google's competitors? We're going to try to answer some of those questions today by examining North Carolina's broadband infrastructure, and we'll hear from the first cities to get Google Fiber. But first, we're here in Durham with WUNC's Leonita Inge, who was at Google's announcement yesterday and joins me now on the State of Things. Hello, Leonita.
Hi, Frank.
Eight communities in North Carolina. Where are they? Who are they?
Well, we'll get Charlotte out of the way. It's down there by itself. And then everybody else is in the Triangle area. We have Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Durham, Cary, Morrisville, Raleigh, and Garner.
And there's been a lot of competition. I mean, this has been in the works since 2010, the competition for this. Tell us what led up to it and what these communities have done to become winners, as it were.
You know, as they were cheering yesterday during the announcement at the North Carolina Museum of History, when you speak to a few people on the side, like, for example, Charles Hayes, the head of the Research Triangle Regional Partnership, he says it's not like, you know, Google Fiber just fell off a turnip truck and came here. We had to work really hard, but everybody doesn't say exactly how hard, you know, they had to work. They just say it was a long process and that it's well-deserved, and they're glad they got it as opposed to somebody else.
See, this is, for me, totally perverse. The idea that you have to work hard to encourage a company here to come here and take your money is to me a little perverse, okay? Because it ain't free. They're going to charge you. So to say, oh, please come and charge me. So tell me what they had to do. What's the requirement here? Do we know what kind of went on behind the scenes to encourage Google? Because we know a lot of other communities were in the competition.
Well, I know Michael Slinger, one of the directors of Google Fiber, the city's team, who was here yesterday. He said that one reason he chose this area is because of the infrastructure. You know, they took a look at everything. They chose this area because I guess they like working with the teams that the cities had head up. They had all this access, just even their permitting process. I mean, they looked at everything from top to bottom. And since he said, oh, everybody was great, I guess everybody jumped when they said jump. I think Ronnie, with the mayor of Garner, he's a character. Ronnie Williams, my buddy. Ronnie Williams was like, you know, he was joking and laughing, and he was saying, you know, we did just about everything. They dangled that carrot, you know, for a long time. So those are some of the things. They just had to give Google access.
And it was important. You mentioned Charles Hayes, who leads Research Triangle Partnership. Let's hear what he had to say about it.
Everywhere will eventually get it, but we just have it first. And so that gives us a competitive advantage.
All right, so that answers my first question. Why would you bend over backwards and work hard to bring in somebody who you can pay money to? Well, getting it first does give you a competitive advantage. And you also talked to Ann Kobelbaum Anderson, right, of Raleigh, who talked about this. Who's she?
Yeah, she's a realtor. And she says, you know, you think of all the number of people that are moving into the area. She works primarily in Raleigh. We know that county is already reached its millions, you know, residents. She said, hey, people knowing they can have access like this will bring people in to buy houses and open up businesses.
All right. So it has some advantages. Google Fiber, of course, works under a different business model than traditional telecommunications companies. Google is only going to build a network if there's sufficient demand for it in a particular neighborhood. And that raises questions about access to high-speed internet, network regulations, and the future of the broadband industry. What's it going to do to the competition? Joining me now is Lauren Onasorge. She's been covering the Google Fiber announcement and Google in the Triangle Business Journal and joins us again. Lauren, welcome back to the State of Things.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So we talked about Google talks about the infrastructure in North Carolina, particularly these areas they've chosen as being kind of just right for them. What is that infrastructure? What attracted Google to this area?
Well, there's a lot of things that attracted Google to this area, namely the universities. There have been previous initiatives to bring this type of service here. I mean, we have North Carolina Next Generation Network, which is a university-led initiative. I mean, there's obviously interest here. People have been talking about this for some time. There's RST Fiber. There's AT&T. We have a lot of different players here. A lot of these players actually emerged after the Google Fiber announcement, which I think is pretty interesting. But we have an educated workforce. We have incredible economic development, Research Triangle Park, companies coming here, people looking at this area. It's ideal for something like this.
But it's sort of interesting. I mean, if you think about Google, again, if your goal is to just get customers, well, you just go anywhere where somebody would have you, right? So what's in it for them as a company trying to become or pose as, in this case, a telecom, to be in an area where the infrastructure is there and there are universities and places like RTP that can use it? What's the advantage? I mean, everybody's paying the rent, right? We're all paying the fee. So if they're paying the fee in Des Moines, Iowa or Charlotte, North Carolina, what's the difference? Is there something about the kind of people here, the way they use it, and any kind of marketing value for them?
To answer that question, look at some of the communities that already have this. Kansas City, Austin. These are entrepreneurially focused communities. They're looking for communities that value innovation with growing entrepreneurship communities, which is exactly what we've been trying to build here over the past several years in Raleigh, in Durham, and it's spreading. And they're hoping that with access to these high-speed connections, it can spread even faster.
It's interesting to see how important education, I guess particularly public education, we think of North Carolina, how important that is to develop, you know, the public institutions, certainly at the higher levels of higher education, how important that infrastructure over the decades has been to building to this point. Leonardo, when are we going to see this happen? Tomorrow is 100 times faster. I can actually get on and read my email.
I think you should not hold your breath and maybe right. Hope for 2 times faster. But that question was asked over and over and over, but it could take a couple of years. I mean, that's my bet. I mean, they're at the point of just putting their team together. They call their Googlers, who they'll be moving here and setting up shop. And then they have to put a marketing team together. And then you get to the construction, and that could take a while.
The first step is going to be the design plan.
Yeah, they're still putting down the game plan.
We asked Kevin Lowe, who's the director of operations for Google, when they would start construction, if they would start construction in 2015, and he couldn't give us an answer. So first you have to design the network. Then you have to construct the network. Uh-huh. Then you have to have people to sign up. So there are several stages, and we're in the early part of that.
We'll know. There are 3 other communities already where Google Fiber is already in place, although, as we're going to find out, not quite in place, where the announcement was made a couple of years ago. Is there anything that Google could have learned from those experiences? When you talk about designing a network, particularly in Wake County here in the Triangle, you've got lots of little communities. It's not Raleigh. It's Raleigh, Garner, Morrisville. So each one of those communities has their own telephone poles, their own regulations. It seems to me that's a pretty complicated arrangement, more so than the other areas they've been.
Well, Google insiders have told me for several months that things did not proceed the way they expected them to in Austin. Things were a lot slower than what they had anticipated. And that's part of the reason you mentioned a checklist. All of the communities that were being considered had to fill out a checklist. It was basically so Google could see the permitting process, so Google could see where everything is so that they could create a plan of feasibility. That's the reason that they implemented that checklist, so that these kinds of issues could be avoided. So they're telling me that the reason this decision process took so long was because they really wanted to iron all of that out so that they could hit the ground running. And their definition of hitting the ground running is, of course, implementing this pretty lengthy design plan.
Any idea why? I mean, we mentioned Wake County, and we mentioned a number of communities in Wake County that are on the list. There are a number that are off the list, APEC, Holly Springs. Why not, if you're Google, just call it Wake County and just keep going?
Well, they want to follow where a lot of this infrastructure is, and that's what they're saying. But interestingly, I spoke to the APEC town manager yesterday, and he's telling me that a lot of the infrastructure concerns in these communities, APEC had it covered. APEC really wanted to be on this list. They were not on the potential cities list, but in 2010, when everybody was vying for what Kansas City got, APEC was told that they were in the top 10. So Apex was really pushing for this hard. And even though they weren't asked to, they actually did fill out a checklist over the summer with some pretty bullish things. They said that Google could use their utility poles for free, for example, things like that. And it's still no dice.
What was the reaction of the mayors who were there in the areas that were chosen? You talked to some of them, Leonida.
They seem very excited. As a matter of fact, it didn't even matter their political persuasion. They were all one group. I think the governor even made note of that. He was like, "Wow, Mayor Bill Bell of Durham is cheering for me." It was like everybody was cheering. But when you speak to the mayor, they're just thinking about making sure that their communities have access and that they can continue to grow. And back to Kansas City, like for Garner, you know, a very small town, barely 27,000 people, they're saying they see what happened in Kansas City. They see that companies abroad and across the country have moved to Kansas City just because of their Google Fiber network, and they're kind of hoping the same thing happens to their community. You know, they've lost a lot of jobs over the past decade, and I guess they're hoping this can be that spark.
Well, we'll talk about the winners and the losers, whether all communities are included in this, and we'll hear some of the experiences of other cities, particularly Austin, as our conversation on the state of things continues with Lauren Onosorge, who is a reporter for the Triangle Business Journal, and we will say goodbye to Leonida Inge. Thank you, Leonida.
Thank you.
There's more on the state of things just ahead. State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today, talking about Google's decision to build a fiber optic broadband network in the Triangle and Charlotte. The rollout has been varied in other cities where Google decided to launch Google Fiber. In Kansas City, there were questions about whether the business model would allow low-income communities to get Google Fiber. In Austin, Texas, Google has had some problems with construction in some neighborhoods. Joining us now is Joy Diaz. She's a city reporter for KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. Joy, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Also with us, Alistair Barr, who writes for the Wall Street Journal. He's been following Google Fiber in Kansas City. Alistair, welcome.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
And Lauren Onosorge is still with me from the Triangle Business Journal. Joy Diaz, in Austin, Google announced it was bringing the gigabit service to that city in 2013. What's the status now? Is that my answer?
Well, the status is mixed. I mean, on paper, we are up and running in some neighborhoods and a couple of apartment complexes, but in reality, we are not. A couple of weeks ago, we were supposed to go live. And when you talk to the apartment owners or the people who live on those apartments, they're very frustrated because they had it on for a few minutes and then they didn't. Now there's a lawsuit going on because those apartments had contracts for life with Time Warner. And so now there's the fight between Google and Time Warner.
Well, what are the problems? You know, you're talking about apartment complexes. We hear, you know, this story is told in terms of cities. You're telling me it's apartment complexes. It's been 2 years and they're still not working. What's the problem?
Because the story of Google Fiber is not the story of a city. It's the story of what Google calls the fiberhoods. And those are the neighborhoods that they break down into. And basically, it's easier in some neighborhoods to roll out the fiber than it is in other neighborhoods. So it's not a citywide process. It's a neighborhood-by-neighborhood process. And in some neighborhoods, the problem has been, you know, the terrain is too rocky to dig deep. In other neighborhoods, the problem was, you know, AT&T owns all of the poles. So, you know, we need to negotiate with AT&T. And in some other neighborhoods, the problem was we do not have any infrastructure at all. So, you know, it's a fiberhood by fiberhood basis, as Google likes to call it.
Alistair Barr, one of the sticking points, as Joy pointed out, is the access to utility poles. Tell us about this, because they're not all, sometimes they're owned by municipalities. Tell us about the struggle to get access to telephone poles.
Yeah, well, the building out of Google Fiber is extremely expensive, and Wall Street investors get very nervous whenever Google expands Google Fiber, because they see millions and millions of dollars being spent and maybe not many returns. But the pole access is crucial, and it comes down to this nitty-gritty thing. If Google has to expand to a city by digging holes through streets 100% of the time, that's going to be 5 to 10 times more expensive than if they could string the connections on utility poles around neighborhoods instead. And actually, interestingly, Charlotte released an FAQ yesterday saying that they reckon that it would be 50-50 between poles and digging trenches. So that is a real issue, and so access to those poles is key for Google if they're going to make any money out of this. There has been some, in the past, have been some tension between Google not being able to get access at fair rates to poles being that are owned by AT&T, for instance. Google has actually written to the FCC, this was late last year, where they said, net neutrality and Title II type proposals, may bring Google under the regulatory umbrella of other telecoms and utilities, which sounds bad, but actually that might get them equal and fair access to these utility poles if it's regulated like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. Lauren, Google says it wants to work with municipalities to streamline government processes. Do we know what that means? Does that mean reducing regulation? I mean, what can we expect? And has any of this been worked out here in this area?
Well, it really means having answers to those questions before a decision is made. That's what it really meant. They didn't want to promise that they would have service in Raleigh when there were all these obvious roadblocks to service in Raleigh. They've been working really closely with CIO Gail Roper, particularly in Raleigh. Gail was actually in Kansas City a couple weeks ago trying to hammer out all these final details. They have to figure out where the fiber huts will be located. Fiber huts are the structures that house the infrastructure necessary for the connections. A lot of those decisions have been made. More decisions will be made. A lot of that comes down to what exactly they decide to do with the design.
Alistair, you really raised an interesting question, whether or not you could get quicker access to these poles by being regulated as a traditional telecom company. So now you're on the pole, but now I'm regulated like these guys, which means rules about net neutrality and other kinds of issues. It's more regulation, and no corporation and no shareholder wants that. Where is Google on this?
Google has been very coy about where it actually stands on this type of thing. They often use Google Fiber as a kind of stick or an incentive to get other internet and telecom providers to upgrade their services or change their behavior. And so what they have said on net neutrality issues is that where Google Fiber exists right now, they don't discriminate against different sources of traffic, whether it's a Netflix streaming movie or a YouTube video. So they're hoping that they can show that they have said to the FCC, this is the way we do it, and this is the way everyone should do it. So they've spoken on that. They've spoken on this poll access point of view, but they haven't really come out with a view, and they haven't told me what they think of the idea of being regulated like a telecom provider. In general, historically, telecom providers and cable companies, when they come to a city and they say we want to provide internet service and video and telecom service, for many decades it's been you have to cover cover the whole city,
right?
Universal service, which goes back to AT&T in the 1930s. And in return, a lot of those regulated telecom companies got some type of monopoly from the city, so they could make some money. And of course, Google does it very, very differently. As one of your other guests mentions, with the fiberhood approach, they go to each little neighborhood and they ask, do you want Google Fiber? And if, let's say, 20% of residents say they do, then they go ahead and build it. If they don't get that level of response, they don't build it. So you can have, in theory, you can have a patchwork of coverage throughout a city, Google has been using a sort of looser regulatory approach so far when it comes to the internet.
Well, let's go back to Austin Joy Diaz. This question of neighborhood by neighborhood, fiberhood by fiberhood means some folks will be included, some folks will be left out, and whenever there's a some are included and some are left out, it tends to be the poor neighborhoods that are left out. Did the city make any provision for that? Does Google make any provision for that?
Absolutely. So one of the things of getting Google Fiber into your city is that there are negotiations going on. And one of the things that the city of Austin was very, very set on was you can come here, but you are going to give us free internet access for at least 100 nonprofits or, you know, organizations with social impact. And Google agreed to that. Now, the problem is those fiber huts are not built yet, but the promise is that those organizations are going to get free service. But, you know, the other thing is that once Google Fiber made this announcement, you know, it's like when somebody moves into a neighborhood and upgrades a home, every other home needs to upgrade after that, you know? So in keeping up with the Googles, you know, the companies in Austin, like Granda Communications, which is a local provider, and the Time Warners and everybody else, including AT&T, had to step up their game. You know, these are people that have had, that have dominated the market and were slow and comfortable in their positions. And once Google Fiber came in, you know, it just whipped them up to shape. And we have giga service throughout all these other companies that already had the infrastructure. So the fact that Google Fiber is not up and running is not necessarily bad, because it, you know, it brought some awareness to the areas of town that did not have internet access. And it also brought some agility to the older companies.
Well, talk about that here, Lauren, in this area, because we already have gigabit service here. AT&T has been providing it. Tell us what the impact of Google's announcement is on the competition here in this area.
Well, Google made the announcement that it may be coming here earlier last year. And then we started noticing some other announcements come across, such as AT&T expanding its gigapower here to a couple places, Raleigh and Cary included. Frontier Communications made an announcement late last year that it'd be bringing its service to Durham. Now, all these different companies are not saying that this is connected in any way to a Google Fiber announcement. In fact, they're explicitly telling me that it's not. But all of these things are happening this year.
The funny thing is, it always happens after Google's announcement.
Exactly. Exactly.
Just a coincidence. And at the moment, I mean, I think AT&T's service is more expensive than what we expect Google to be. So what do we think this is going to have an impact on prices? And what about standard broadband right now? I mean, the Time Warners of the world, who are not in the fiber, you know, the fiber service business, will they change prices for their cable service?
It's all very likely. I'm curious as to what you both have to say about what happened in Kansas City and Austin, but it's something that you can see. I mean, Google Fiber comes to an area, prices start to go down, services start to increase.
Alistair, I know you covered Kansas City. Tell us about their experience.
Yeah, it's that effect is known by some in the industry as the game of gigs, and it's like a sort of mind game, strategy game, where Google, you know, says to everyone, we're really serious about this, and we're going to do lots of Google Fiber neighborhoods, and then, you know, then the idea is that all these competitors that are already there upgrade their service or make it a little cheaper, and then everyone waits to see what happens. So it is a kind of mind game. And in Kansas City, the incumbents have increased their speeds for sure. They on price wise, there has been some movement there, but it's less about price, because actually Google Fiber is relatively expensive. It's $70 a month. And $120 a month for if you want TV as well. There is a free service that is much slower, but there's a $300 installation fee for that. So it is having an effect, I would say, more on speeds rather than on prices.
Well, Alistair, let me stay with you for a minute. Does this suggest that maybe Google wins both ways? On the one hand, they could make money by charging, you know, by basically signing up customers for Google Fiber. On the other hand, they have products that require high speed, YouTube to name one. So if I can just get my competitors to get faster, I win on that side, and then I don't have to go digging through rock and hanging things on phone poles.
Yep, and I would say the preferable alternative for Google would be that everyone else spends the money to upgrade
to carry their product faster.
And it is what they do, right? I mean, even with the polls or with the infrastructure or with everything else, I mean, the negotiation with Austin was you, AT&T, who owned 20% of the polls, you will share with me. And AT&T's like, okay, but I invested it in the beginning, so I will get the same deal as you. So it's just this really strong fight between the giants.
Well, and an interesting fight, because that investment happens at a time when they're regulated monopolies. So you're playing under the rules of a regulated monopoly in which you're protected, but you're severely regulated. So you put up polls. Then you privatize, and now you own the polls and say, hey, but they're my polls. And the community says, well, wait a minute, you built them under a different set of rules. Fascinating environment these days, would you say?
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely.
The issue there is, if you're looking at why Google is bothering to do all this, one of the theories is with things like the checklist and going through permitting processes and things like that, you could argue that it's basically setting up cities to do this type of thing. And if Google doesn't do it, they have a system where if someone else wants to do it, they can say, well, look, we did all this work last year to set up this permitting process. We've hired all these extra people. We've worked out the poll issue. Come and do it. And somebody else can come and copy that process. And Google is interested in promoting other people to do that too, obviously.
Right. Again, pointing to the fact, as you just said, they win either way. Back to Kansas City, Alistair, in terms of fairness, in terms of distribution of service, were there any issues in Kansas City over who gets it and who doesn't?
So we employed a surveying firm to go door to door last year to look into this. And one thing off the bat is that Google has covered a lot of the places that they initially said they were going to. And there isn't a disparity as far as poor or minority neighborhoods who could get it if they want to. So the service is there and available in across a broad spectrum of society in Kansas City. But what we found was the uptake rate so far, and this was in the summer last year to that date, what we found, which is both unsurprising and disappointing, is that, wealthy white neighborhoods in Kansas City, the uptake rate was almost 50% for Google Fiber, and in poor minority neighborhoods, it was around 10 or 11%. And so the issue there is not necessary access, is more who can afford and who believes that type of thing is important for them, and what the priorities are when you're trying to put maybe food on the table in poorer neighborhoods. So the effect is that you have wealthier neighborhoods with blazing fast internet at home, and then poorer neighborhoods with either nothing at all or just slower connections, and that has implications for things like if you're trying to apply for a job or if you're trying to research homework for your kids at home in the evenings. So there is a disparity in that respect, but not in the respect of Google actually going to each neighborhood.
Right. It's if you may not have had internet to begin with, so then this is not really an upgrade or that sort of thing. Or slow service that was very inexpensive.
Yeah, exactly. It's the difference between slower and faster, much faster.
So, Frank, that's one of the reasons why it was so important for the Austin City Council to, really press Google for those 100 nonprofits, because one of them is like, our historically black college, Houston Tillotson University here. The other one was, more than 20 libraries are going to get it for free. And it was going right back to what Alistair was saying, if you don't have internet or if you don't have a way to pay for it, how do you get access to that? How can your city take advantage of this, shiny new toy to benefit other people?
And of course, Lauren, I guess we should take one step back here in North Carolina. We think that this is the only way that you can get high-speed internet service. City of Wilson tried to provide that and does, and became the last city to do it because our legislature outlawed cities from providing this for its citizens, which also helped pave the way for corporations like Google, I guess.
That's exactly right. And we were just talking about communities that didn't make the cut. One such example would be Holly Springs. They actually have the infrastructure in place. They installed it over the summer. And I'm sure if it were legal, they could potentially do something as a city. But since it's not, they're soliciting other companies to come in, lead the charge, use what's there, and implement. And I'm sure other communities are considering similar action.
Is this true? Alistair, I wonder if you know, across the nation, other states that have restricted their cities from providing free internet service the way we have restricted it here and allowed only corporations to provide this service. Is that true all over the country?
It's not true all over the country, but it is true in some states for sure. And it's a very worrying trend. And so Chattanooga is the greatest example so far of municipal Wi-Fi that's really worked well. And Google actually mentions Chattanooga a lot in its announcements, but it's unclear exactly how Google feels about the whole municipal gigabit push and fiber optic push. But again, I think overall Google would be very, very happy if every single city did it themselves.
Right, then everybody would have it, and their stuff could go fast to every household in America. They'll have to get them a little chair to lobby here in the North Carolina legislature if that's what they want. Alistair Barr is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you for being on the program. Joy Diaz, reporter for KUT Radio in Austin, and Lauren Onasorge is a reporter for the Triangle Business Journal. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Just ahead, we're going to meet North Carolina's new poet laureate, Shelby Stevenson, on the State of Things. Stay tuned.